Translation: when one pours water on the root of a tree, the trunk and the branches of the tree are automatically pleased. Similarly, when one becomes a devotee of Lord Vishnu, everyone is served, for the Lord is the super soul of everyone. Purport. Oh, sorry, if everyone can repeat, please. When one pours water on the root of a tree, the trunk and the branches of the tree are automatically pleased. Similarly, when one becomes a devotee of Lord Vishnu, everyone is served, for the Lord is the super soul of everyone. Purport. As stated in the Padma Purana, Arhadanam Sarvesham Vishnu Arhadanam Param Tasmit Parataram Devi Tadiyanam Samacharam. Of all types of worship, worship of Vishnu is the best, and better than the worship of Lord Vishnu is the worship of his devotees, the Vaishnavas. The many demigods worshipped by people who are attached to the material desires, kamanas, tathas, thai, hrita, jnana, prapadyante. Because people are embarrassed by so many material desires, they worship Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, and the goddess Kali on Durga, Ganesh, and Surya to achieve the different results. However, one can achieve all these results simultaneously by the worship of Lord Vishnu. As stated elsewhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Yatataro Mula Nishchanina Triyate Skandha Bajos Pashukaha Patapa Rakaya Yatandriyanam Tatha Sarvi Banam Achyuteya. By pouring water on the root of a tree, one nourishes its trunk and of all its branches, fruits, and flowers. And just by supplying food to the stomach, one satisfies all the limbs of the body. Similarly, by the worship of Lord Vishnu, one can satisfy everyone. Krishna consciousness is not a sectarian religious movement. Rather, it is meant for all embracing welfare activities for the world. One can enter this movement without discrimination in terms of caste, creed, religion, or nationality. If one is trained to the worship of the Supreme Godhead, Krishna, who is the origin of Vishnu Tattva, one can become fully satisfied and perfect in all respects. When one pours water on the root of a tree, the trunk and the branches of the tree are automatically pleased. Similarly, when one becomes a devotee of Lord Vishnu, everyone is served, for the Lord is the super soul of everyone. Om Jnanati Marandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militan Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitinamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesa Sunyavadi Pastyachade Satarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrindam. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, asking the mercy of all the Vaishnavas here, I don't feel qualified to speak here. So if you can all please allow me to say a few things. Vancha kalpa tribhisya kripa sindhu vyevacha patito nam pavanebhyo vaishnavibhyo namo namaha. When one studies the Vedas, in the Vedas there are many, many different types of worship which is there. The Vedas are so vast. You can be an atheist if you're a follower of the Vedas. You can even be, you know, a Mayavadi. You can be a theist. There's so many different routes and paths one can take. The Vedas has so much different kinds of information. And there's also many different types of worship which is recommended there in the Vedas. Particularly if you go to South India, there's different Brahmins. They perform different types of worship for different kinds of needs. In this material world, we have so many different kinds of needs. One of the important things is we need good health. If you don't have good health, life becomes very, very difficult. We need some kind of wealth. Wealth is very, very important. If we have no wealth, we cannot sustain the body, the mind, and the soul. We need somewhere to live. So these kind of necessities in the body are there. So there's different types of worship recommended in the Vedas, that if you perform this worship to different types of demigods, then one can acquire some wealth, or one can acquire some things for the body. For example, if someone has some problems with their health, then there's injunction in the Vedas that if you worship Surya Dev, then you can get good health. If one wants wealth, then there's some chance that if you worship Lakshmi, then you can get some wealth. Of course, Lakshmi is also chanchala. She doesn't like to stay in one place very often. And she's always devoted to Lord Vishnu, so she always stays with Lord Vishnu. And sometimes people worship Uma. Uma is the wife of Lord Shiva. And then if you want a nice husband, then the goddess Uma is worshipped. So in this way, different types of worships are recommended. However, here it is explained that of all the different types of worship which is recommended in the Shastras, which is recommended there in the scriptures, that worship to Vishnu is the highest. And if you worship Lord Vishnu, then all your other necessities are automatically fulfilled. One doesn't have to individually go and try and satisfy all the 330 million demigods. One doesn't have to worship all of them individually. It is explained here in the Srimad Bhagavatam that just simply by worshipping Lord Vishnu, then all the other requirements are automatically fulfilled. And the example is given over here that if you have a plant, and if you try to nourish the plant by watering the trunk, if you try to give the water to the branches or to the leaves, no nourishment can actually go to the plant itself. The best way to offer the nourishment to the plant for it to be healthy is to water the roots. And from the roots, then the nourishment is automatically given to the rest of the plant. So the root is also known as mula. And mula is also bija, which means seed. And in the Vedic mantras, when we chant some mantras, the mula mantra is always used first. And this mula mantra acknowledges that Lord Vishnu is the first person to worship. Because when you worship Lord Vishnu, then automatically all your other needs are satisfied. This one very nice story in the Mahabharata, some of you may probably already know. Once when the Pandavas, when they were exiled to the forest, they had one pot, and this pot was very, very magical. And from this pot, unlimited amounts of foodstuffs would come. And from this pot, whatever food you wanted would come. However, there was a little clause to this pot. As soon as Draupadi ate this from the pot, then there will be no more food for the day. So when Bhima was satisfied, because Bhima used to eat a lot, the pot would provide plenty. And then finally, when Bhima and all the others were satisfied, then Draupadi would eat, and that was it for the day. The pot wouldn't produce anymore. Then what happened? Duryodhana, he had some spies. And his spies would watch what the Pandavas were doing, and they would report daily to Duryodhana, because he felt great happiness when he saw the Pandavas suffering. He had great happiness when he saw the Pandavas were suffering. So one day, the great Durvasa Muni, he came to the palace of Duryodhana. Now, Durvasa Muni is known to travel with a lot of his disciples. How many disciples? 10,000 disciples. 60,000, was it? Wow, 60,000 disciples. So that's a lot of people. That's like having a Janmashtami crowd following you wherever you go. Can you imagine that? So, you know, the amount of cooking you have to do for all those people, you can't even begin to imagine. So then Durvasa Muni, with his 60,000 disciples, arrived at the doorstep of Duryodhana. Of course, Duryodhana was a king. He had all necessities at his will. So he provided for all the 60,000 disciples. And he served Durvasa Muni very, very nicely. Now, Durvasa Muni is a very interesting character. Because Durvasa Muni, he can be very, very easily angered. The slightest provocation, the slightest mistake, then the wrath of the Rishi will come and you will be cursed. So Duryodhana took specific care in looking after Durvasa Muni. And at the end of his stay, Durvasa Muni was very, very happy. And then he wanted to give some blessing to Duryodhana. He wanted to give some reward, some ashiwad. And Duryodhana said, I am very lucky. I have all this which is provided to me. But my brothers, my cousins, they're living in the forest. Why don't you go and bless them? Why don't you go and visit them? So then he knew that at a specific time, when Draupadi ate, there will be no food. There will be nothing to provide for Durvasa Muni and the 60,000 disciples. And it was Duryodhana's intention that when Durvasa Muni arrived, and usually when sadhus come to your house, they're usually very, very hungry. Isn't it, Gurudas? Sometimes when you invite sadhus to your house, that's one of the characteristics. You've heard of the saying, laddu saddu? They love their laddus. They love eating. It's just, you know, the nature of the Brahmin. Krishna eats through the Brahmins. So they like eating rabri, chapati, pakoras. You feed this to the sadhus, they'll be very, very happy. So when Durvasa Muni with his 60,000 disciples, when he arrived where the Pandavas were staying, the Pandavas, they saw like some dust in the distance and they was wondering, what is that? Then they looked and they saw it was Durvasa Muni with the 60,000 disciples. And all of a sudden the Pandavas, they went on panic mode. Durvasa Muni is arriving over here. We have nothing to feed them. And then Arjuna and Bhima said, we should just leave this place. We shouldn't stay over here. Yudhishthira saying, no, no, when a guest comes, we have to welcome them, we have to look after them. In fact, there's a special hell that says that if you don't welcome your guest, then you can go to this specific hell. So it is very important in the Vedic culture that the guest is welcomed. Even an enemy is welcome. It is said that in the Mahabharata, when the war was taking place, when Arjuna went to see Duryodhana, even though during the daytime they would fight, when Arjuna went to see Duryodhana, he would welcome him, he would offer him some refreshments, and they would talk. So this was the general standard in the Vedic culture. When someone comes, then you welcome them very, very nicely. So Yudhishthira was saying, no, we should welcome them. Then Bhima was saying, well, the point is, if all the 60,000 sadhus come, they're going to be really, really hungry. And Durvasa Muni, if we can't feed him and his disciples, then he will curse us. What to do? What a dilemma they're in. They want to welcome the sadhus, they want to feed them, they want to look after them, but they have nothing to offer them in the forest. Yudhishthira said, let's just depend on Lord Krishna, see what happens. Durvasa Muni arrived with all his disciples, and then Yudhishthira welcomed him and said nice pleasing words. And then Durvasa Muni said that on the request of Duryodhana, we have come to see you. We want to comfort you here in this place where you're staying. And we have traveled a long way. And after traveling, we are a little tired. And after tiredness, generally comes hunger. So then he says, if you have something to offer us, then we will be very, very grateful. So Yudhishthira couldn't really say no. He was in a sticky situation. So then Yudhishthira said, go and perform your evening oblations. Then when you come back, then we'll have something for you to eat. So Durvasa Muni, along with his disciples, they went to perform the oblations. And at that time, Draupadi was saying, how can you say that we can offer some food, some prasadam to all these people? We have nothing. I've already eaten from the pot. We can't give anything. And when they come, and if there's nothing there, then that's not going to be good. Especially when you say something and you go back on your word, it's not good. If you had said at the beginning, actually we don't have anything, it's not a problem. Sorry, we're living in the forest. Maybe he might have understood. But you already said you're going to feed him. What are we going to do now? So then Draupadi was in this dilemma. Then she started praying to Krishna. She's a great devotee of Krishna. And then her prayers were heard by Krishna in Dwarka. Then at that very instant, when Draupadi was praying, Krishna arrived in front of the Pandavas. So what was the prayer? Prayer can be such a powerful element that by praying, we can invoke the presence of Krishna. So Draupadi's prayers were very, very pure, that it invoked the Lord to come over there. So then Krishna came over there, and then Krishna said he was very happy to see the Pandavas. And then the first thing Krishna said, I'm really, really hungry. He said, I was just about to eat in Dwarka, but now you invited me to come here. I'm hungry. Do you have anything to eat? And Draupadi said, my dear Lord, we have nothing. We have Durvasa Muni and his 60,000 disciples waiting to be fed. How can we feed you? We can't even feed them. And if we don't feed Durvasa Muni, he will curse us. Please help us. And Krishna said, I'm really hungry. See if there's something in the kitchen. Draupadi said, there's nothing. He said, bring the pot. Let me see if there's anything in the pot. Then Draupadi was a little embarrassed. She brought the pot. There was nothing in the pot. Then Krishna said, here, let me have a look. Then Krishna looked inside the pot and he found one small tiny morsel of food. And Krishna took that and he ate it. And then Krishna said to Bhima, go to the place where the sadhus, where Durvasa is performing the oblations. Tell him the meal is ready. Tell him to come. Prasadam is already cooked, ready to be served. It's getting cold. And Bhima said, we don't have anything. He said, just go and tell them. And then as Bhima was going, Durvasa Muni saw Bhima coming down. And then Bhima was feeling a little bit of ache in his stomach. I'm sure a lot of you have had this experience after a nice feast. Hands up, who's guilty of overeating a little bit? I am. Come on. Whenever you get Mother Lalita's nice sweet rice, you can't help but whack it in, isn't it? So, in this way, have you heard the saying, I can't even fit another pea in my stomach? So that's how Durvasa Muni felt, that there was no room to put any more prasadam in. So then he spoke to his disciples, he said, I can't eat any. And the disciples said, I can't eat any. Just a moment ago, I was really, really hungry. I was looking forward to some nice prasadam. But now, all of a sudden, my stomach is completely full up. What should I do? And there's Bhima coming with his gada. We don't want to be at the wrath of Bhima, he might smack us with his gada. We don't want to disappoint them. Then Durvasa Muni said, we better leave. We better not stay over here. So then Durvasa Muni told his disciples, you stay here, you explain to Bhima, and we'll go and you catch up later on. And the disciples said, no, I don't want to face Bhima. I don't want to face it. You're my disciple. You have to stay. And the disciples stayed. Then Bhima said, come on, the prasadam is ready. But the disciples, they all disappeared. The disciples begged forgiveness, said, sorry, we had to go. Then Bhima started laughing. The disciple went, then Krishna came with the Pandavas. And then Bhima explained the situation, that the disciples all disappeared. So what is the moral? What is the conclusion of the story? Anyone? That's right. Pray to Krishna, he will come and help you. Yes, if you feed Krishna, then automatically, as explained in this verse, he is the mula, he is the root. If you satisfy Krishna, then automatically everything will be satisfied. So at one point, all those 60,000 disciples were very, very hungry. When you have this pang of hunger, it's very, very strong. It's very powerful. One person, I was reading one place, he says, there are many, many different types of suffering in this world. But one of the strongest suffering is the suffering of hunger. It's a very, very powerful urge. And if you ever suffer from starvation, it's very, very difficult. So at one point, these sadhus were very, very hungry. But because Krishna was satisfied, because Krishna was fed, then automatically, because Krishna is here explained as the super soul in everyone's heart, because he was satisfied, then the sadhus were automatically satisfied and they felt also fed. So this is the way we can find real happiness, is to serve Lord Vishnu. So how do we serve Lord Vishnu? What does service mean? So I was reading, Prabhupada was giving one explanation. What service means is to have a relationship with Krishna. This is how service begins. You cannot serve somebody unless you have a specific relationship. So Prabhupada was explaining, the way we serve Krishna is to establish a relationship with him, and that's how you serve him. So the way we have a certain service with Krishna, there are different types of relationships. As we know, there's Santa, there's Sakya, there's Dasya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya. So these are different types of relationships that one can have in serving Lord Krishna. And if one serves the Lord in this way, then one can be satisfied and happy. It might seem a little strange, it might seem a little bit hard to understand, that how is it possible that if we serve somebody else, we can become happy? How is it that if we serve Krishna, we can become happy? But because Krishna is the root of everything, he is Rama. Rama means happiness. So generally, the general rule of the thumb is people want to become happy in this world, isn't it? No one gets up in the day thinking, I'm going to have a miserable day. Yeah, bring on the back pain, I'll be really happy with that. No, we want to be happy. We want to be satisfied. And generally, happiness means we are satisfied. If we're unhappy, then we're not satisfied. So to find that happiness, sometimes we look in the wrong places. We try to find happiness through the gratification of the senses, because that's what the senses, they tell us. If we see something, then we want that. It's such a powerful thing, this image. If we see something for the first time, even if we're driving or something like that, this image then makes the mind want that. And if we hear something, then we want to hear some nice music or something like that. Or generally we want to taste some nice food. But if we dovetail all these things rather than ourselves, but to Krishna, then we can find real happiness. Because no matter how much we try and satisfy ourselves, it cannot be done. It's just not possible. Prabhupada gives the example over here of the stomach. So some of you might have seen this drama by the Bhaktivedanta players. I'm not advertising anything. But Prabhupada gives a very, very nice example that once the senses, they decided to go on strike because they thought, look over here, we're doing all the hard work. But who is enjoying all the hard work? The stomach. And the stomach is doing nothing. It's just sitting and getting bigger and bigger and bigger. The leg is walking, getting all the food. The hands is chopping up all the vegetables. Ba, 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 ba. The mouth is doing all the chewing. The nose is trying to smell if it's okay. So in this way, the senses were thinking, oh, we're working so hard. But this stomach is a rascal. It's just getting all the nectar. So then all the senses decided to go on strike. So then they decided, the leg said, I'm not going to go to the supermarket. The hand said, I'm not going to cut up the vegetables. The mouth said, I'm not going to put anything in my mouth. The stomach is getting everything. So in this way, the stomach wasn't getting any food, wasn't getting no nourishment. So what was happening? Because there was no food going on, there was no nourishment going in, the body, the senses became weaker and weaker. The eyes were feeling droopy. The hands couldn't move. The legs were feeling lethargic. They couldn't get out of bed or anything. So then the senses realized that actually, even though we were serving the stomach was actually feeding us. We were getting nourished. Shishirada Gokulananda Ki Jai. So then they came to the conclusion that although we do the work, and although the stomach seemingly seems to be the only enjoyer, the stomach also provides for us as well. So the stomach is just like Krishna. So when we serve Krishna, when we satisfy Krishna's needs, when we satisfy Krishna's senses, Rishikesh, then we will become happy. Because we are intrinsically connected to Krishna, it's explained, the super soul is everyone's heart. We are the Atma, Jivera Swarup, Krishna Nitya Das. So that is our constitutional position, that we are servants of Krishna. And unless and until we come to that position, we will never really be satisfied. No matter what life throws at us, no matter what we have in life, no matter what we have, we will never truly be happy. One day we may be a king with all the wealth and everything, then the next moment is taken away. Prabhupada, when he was talking to John Lennon and George Harrison on the first meeting, and he gave the example of JFK, he was the president of United States of America. He had everything. He was the most powerful man in the world. But one bullet shot took everything away from him. So we shouldn't think that material things, material comforts, will find or give us happiness. But in some ways, we don't even really want to be happy. Because once Tamal Krishna Maharaj was speaking to Srila Prabhupada and he was saying, I'm in so much anxiety, I'm always worried about the construction of Mayapur, I'm not very, very happy, I'm always in anxiety. Then Prabhupada said, we're not interested in our own happiness. Prabhupada said that we're interested in trying to make Krishna happy. And he said that if you make Krishna happy, then you will become happy yourself. But if you try to become happy independently, then you won't become happy at all. So this is the understanding that we should have, that if you really want to be happy, if you really want that satisfaction in life, then we have to serve Vishnu. We have to serve Krishna. So Vishnu, anyone knows what Vishnu means? All-pervading. So Krishna is everywhere. He's omnipresent. He's omnipotent. But he very kindly comes in the form of the deity. And for us, he also comes in the form of the holy name. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So in our, maybe, at least in my state, it might be very, very difficult for us to serve Krishna or establish a certain relationship with Krishna. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he has recommended that the best way to serve or to try and get that God self-realization is to chant the holy names. And he says, Harinam, 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 Eva Kaluna, Steve, Anastave, Anastavia. There's no other way. There's no other way. There's no other way. In previous yugas, people used to perform tapa to try and perform this service, this relationship with Krishna. People would perform big yajnas. People would perform deity worship. But this is not recommended as the way to get perfection. The way to get perfection is to simply chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Sharva Shakti Hoys. Krishna has invested all his power, Krishna has invested all his energy in this particular holy name. So that simply by chanting this name and serving the holy name, then we can derive this happiness that we're all looking for, we're trying to find. So I just wanted to speak a little bit about Jagannath Das Babaji. It's also his appearance, isn't it? This appearance. So Jagannath Das Babaji, he was a great devotee. He was called by Bhaktivinoda Thakur the commander-in-chief of the Vaishnavas. He was a very, very elevated Vaishnava. And he lived up to the age of... There's different kinds of statements made. I read one that said he was 135 years old. And he says that he was so old, he used to droop over. He had to be carried in his basket. In fact, he was so old that his lids... He couldn't lift the muscles, that he had to lift his eyelids to see. So there's one very nice story in relation to Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. When Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he first visited Navadvip, he wanted to find the place where Mahaprabhu appeared. So he went to the place in Navadvip, and this place was said to be where Lord Chaitanya appeared. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his studies of Chaitanya Charitamrita, could understand that the description where Lord Chaitanya lived was on the other side of the river Ganges. I don't know if anyone's been to Navadvip. You've all been to Navadvip? So that's on the other side of the Ganges, and that's where Lord Chaitanya's birthplace was, and that's where all the pilgrims used to come. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur was not satisfied that that was the real place that Lord Chaitanya appeared, because according to Chaitanya Charitamrita's description, it seemed that Lord Chaitanya's appearance was on the other side of the river Ganga. So then he looked through different maps, he looked through different types of archives to try and find out where the actual place of Lord Chaitanya's birth was. So he went looking around, then he found one place, and this place was quite interesting. Anyone know why this place was interesting? Sorry? That's right. Only Tulasi Devis were found in this particular tract of land. Nothing else seemed to grow. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a little curious. And then he went and he asked the owner about this particular land. And the owner said, oh, that place is haunted. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, why? He said, we try to grow different kinds of things. We are farmers. We try to grow some corn, different things. But nothing would grow. Only this Tulsi leaf seems to grow. But we can't understand why. So then we decided to just use it as a wasteland. And we decided to use it so that we can go and do our call of nature. So then the Muslims would try and go over there and do their call of nature. And these flames would shoot, burning them. So they couldn't understand. So anytime anybody went there to try and do something, these flames would come out and burn them. So then the Muslims said, this place is Pagal, is haunted. It's probably some ghost over here. So then they just kind of forgot about this land. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur could realize this was possibly the place where Lord Chaitanya was born. So then he bought the land from the Muslims, he excavated it, and slowly, slowly, he established a temple over there. So just to confirm that this was the place where Lord Chaitanya was born, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj was brought over. He was over 100 years old, and he had to be carried. And as soon as he arrived to this place where Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying was the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya, immediately Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj jumped in ecstasy, leapt high, and he said, "Ye ke Nimai ke janmasthan hai." He said, this was the place where Nimai's birthplace is. So then Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj confirmed this place to be the place of confirmed where Lord Chaitanya appeared. So with that acknowledgement, then Bhaktivinoda established that place to be the place where Lord Chaitanya lived. He was very, very renounced, very, very simple. He was also the Siksha Guru of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he mostly kept to himself. And he lived 6 months in Mayapur, and he lived 6 months in Navadvip. And one day, his servant was feeding Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. And then Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj started also feeding some puppies that were there. And then the next day, Maharaj Babaji was also feeding the puppies. And then the servant shooed them away. And then Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj said, these are the residents of the Holy Dham. If you're not going to feed them, then I don't want to eat as well. So then he showed that everyone has to be fed, everyone has to be looked after in the Holy Dham. So in this way, he could understand, he had a perfect vision, how everyone in Vrindavan were all residents of the Holy Dham. So I will stop over here, a few moments for any questions or comments.